Hey there, folks. Welcome to the Crazy Libertarian. This is Bradley Foster. You are listening on 88.1 FM. That call-in number is 701-566-0917. Once again, 701-566-0917. As for those of you on the visual feed, as you can tell, I have another guest here. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself there?
My name is Raheem Williams. I'm just a guy. Sometimes I hang out with Bradley here, and today we're going to be doing it on the camera and record it.
Yeah, so hopefully this doesn't tank either of our future professional careers. So
it won't tank mine.
Don't speak too soon.
Oh, no.
I have done worse. So we're going to be talking about a lot today. There's a couple things I'll talk about, something on the domestic side and something a little more foreign policy. You know, we couldn't make it in the studio last week because of some issues, and a lot happened. We somehow didn't get into World War III, which is a nice start. I think that we can all agree on that.
This is a nice start.
But I also want to kind of pivot to something that's happening literally as we sit here and record. This is terrifying, especially... I don't know, air this little bit before we get on at 7 p.m. tonight, please. But there is a fake police officer going around in parts of Clay and Becker counties in a white undercover Jeep, pulling people over, impersonating an officer, specifically, it appears, going after females. That's what's... And by the way, this isn't like they caught the dude. They have three separate reports of it. The most recent one was, I believe, an hour and a half ago, as of the time of this recording.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, like, live and terrifying. This is horrifying. So a real quick PSA, if you're out in rural Clay or Becker counties and a cop pulls you over in a white Jeep...
Floor it.
Call the police before you stop so that you can... Oh, wait, but it's against the law in Minnesota to use cell phones unless they're one touch or less. So if it is a real cop, you'll get another. So I guess pull over and hope for the best, right?
I mean, you can't use the phone once
if it's
you
one touch.
Pulled over, right?
Like you can use it if you're pulled over, but...
Okay, so pull over before you make the call. There we go.
Which is
call the cops, 100%. But after you pull over. There we go.
But for real, this is a horrifying thing with, first off, what's your immediate hot take on this?
Well, my take is, like, I think this is clearly a sick individual that's probably preying on women. And if we don't get him off the streets, this is going to probably escalate sooner rather than later. And that's my top concern. I have five little sisters, so this kind of stuff does bother me. And as my personal friend, you know, I'm always watching those horror shows and the woman's always the victim, which is tragic, but
that
it's
is true.
And so it definitely seems like whoever this isn't in their right state of mind, because I can't even imagine why you'd want to impersonate a cop. They're not exactly having the best PR these days.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, so it's like there's something going on, like the intent behind doing this and the fact that all of them have been women is definitely raises eyebrows. So yep. I hope this guy gets caught quick.
And you know, can I just say for a second what's really, and we'll get into like the cool political stuff, but while we're on our own little local horror show here, the local take on it,
let's hear it.
What a sickening amount of premeditation, you know what I mean? Because this isn't like you're like you're going and getting drunk and yelling at people on the street. Like, this is like...
And that's what makes it even more disturbing.
And there's been three confirmed reports. That's just confirmed. We don't know. He might have pulled 5 to 10 people over. And how many people is he going to have contact with before he gets brave or stupid enough to do something? This could end tragically. So, if you're going through anywhere in that area, rural Clay, Becker counties, and you get pulled over by a white Jeep, quiet you. So yeah, that's something that I want to get out there as a PSA. And now for the fun political bits of it, you know, how did this even happen, right? Because there's a lot that's kind of wound up here. And you know, as someone that thinks that a lot of our laws directly harm people, this is kind of a horrifying and tragic, and I hope that they get this guy before I'm done recording this episode, by the way. I hope that, like, we step out of the studio and we find out that he's gone, and that would be a much happier ending. But there's a lot of enablement that goes on with this, because as far as we're aware, he's in what looks like an undercover police car, or police Jeep, whatever vehicle, pulling people over. And so let's start with, first off, something that's always kind of amazed me. I mean, this isn't something that's like totally outside the realm of possibility, right? This isn't the first time that something like this has happened. This is something that people have worried about for a while. This is a big argument that civil libertarians have been making about undercover cars as well. Hell, you know, you can buy lights on Amazon for $80. You can get a siren for a couple hundred.
Just to push a, I definitely understand that. But with the undercover cars in that regard, it's like also, and I'm not a fan of undercover cars at all, but it's kind of hard to tell, like, how do you say this? Like, if you get pulled over from behind, it's kind of actually really hard to tell, like, what the car looks like at night. And these are happening at night. So, like, even if it was a marked car, it, you know what I mean?
Which is like, also another, which actually kind of fuels the argument even more. Like, why is it not immediately, it's always bewildered me why people who have the gall to put to protect and serve on the side of their vehicles don't have the strength to stand up and make their vehicles visible to the public or at least discernible. Do you know why the Minnesota State Highway Patrol, or one of the reasons why they went with such a unique color scheme? That maroon and brown, maroon and gold color scheme. It wasn't because of Minnesota Gophers. It was because it makes it easier to blend in rural parts of the state, and it makes it way easier to get people for things like, you know, possession or drinking and driving. So they're literally doing it to increase
turnout.
And to me, that's a... I think we need to have a larger discussion here, because how much are we willing to accept in the name of safety? Like, How many women have to be pulled over and harassed, or God forbid what else, before we really start going, is it really worth catching the few extra people? And furthermore, making it hard for people in actual emergencies to identify where they need to go for help?
I want to push back a little bit. I actually do agree with most of your sentiment. I think it's a very weird and, if I'm not mistaken, almost uniquely American tradition of cops hiding from the people they protect and serve.
Oh, they did it in the 1930s and 40s in the most of Germany and Russia, too. So it's not just American. I just thought that side lost the Cold War.
But my thing is, like, the whole, undercover policing, especially in terms of, like, regular traffic infractions, that's so bizarre. And I agree with you on, I think it actually endangers public safety more so than it helps. Also, but I'm going to push back, because I think, and you didn't say this exactly, but it definitely seemed like it was a bit of an implication that this psychopath impersonating a cop, somehow cops are responsible for, I guess, making it too easy to impersonate him. That seemed like a bit of a stretch to me. I'm just not buying it.
Here's the thing, right?
Not the cop's fault that a psychopath is impersonating a cop. Neither than it would be your fault if the psychopath impersonated you. Like, that's,
no, but here's the thing. I do bizarre. A lot of things that make myself uniquely Bradley Foster, so that if I was having a bad day, someone could identify me roughly as Bradley Foster. I don't go around waiting. I don't sit in unmarked cars and regularly pull people over.
We drove here in an unmarked car.
But it had my license plate on it, but I don't sit around pulling people over. Here's the thing, right? All that I'm saying is they didn't, I'm not blaming them per se, and I hope that they get this guy. I hope they get this guy, take him off the street, whatever our little policy discussion is, we can all go home and hope that this guy isn't out, like, doing horrible things and harassing people. Let's get this guy off the street, please. But the larger point is that even though they didn't create the sufficient conditions, they definitely created all the necessary conditions. Like, this is
by what? Enforcing the law?
By driving around for the purposes of largely victimless crimes. Like I said, this is a larger discussion here. This is not like individual cops per se.
This is a larger discussion, so let's have it.
And so when you have we've had a society where we're regularly used to people pulling over for largely, you know, minor offenses for people in undercover cars, and like, it's just a little bizarre that this is such an uniquely American thing, and I don't understand why. Because America has all these awesome protections, but, like, you know, in the United Kingdom, most cop cars are, like, bright yellow and pink and, like, visible, like, I don't know, school buses are. You never hear someone impersonating a school bus.
Let's go.
Or a fire truck, for that matter.
I mean, don't give them no ideas, but anyways, let's take a step back and kind of, let's dive in, because this is way bigger than cop cars. Like, we're having a conversation between active and passive policing. Absolutely. And I've seen some libertarian memes and stuff that police should be more like firefighters, call them when you need them, and until then just stay at the station. I'm not so convinced of that, and the reason I'm not is, like, I do note the problems you point out, but the big issue is active policing definitely does save lives. So many fugitives have been caught via active policing. So many criminal attempts have been foiled via active policing. And it's like you read about them in the news, you hear about it, oh, cops apprehended. It's generally like literally like so many wanted, dangerous criminals. And even this person who's going around doing these fake pullover thing, it's like almost 95% chance will be caught in a traffic stop. Like they're like that, they're probably not gonna, if they don't have a license plate, they're not gonna go to his house. You're gonna have to catch him in the act. So it's like if you're not doing active policing, it's like there are some negative consequences to that. So it's not as easy as one or the other. There's definitely, you have to strike a balance.
Well, I mean, first off, I'm not a really big fan of the whole, I'm not totally against active policing once but we need to really discuss which laws we're going out to actively enforce. And here's the thing. Here's the thing. Unless and until we stop all these nonsense crimes, because there is a definite survivor bias here. Mm-hmm. You talked about the people that we catch and whatever. Think about all the people that get their lives ruined over a minor amount of marijuana or over an addiction. Millions of people right there that you never hear about. Furthermore, let me go on to say, think about all the millions of people who have been innocent, who have been pulled over. I was listening to an officer, I forget his exact name, which is horrible because I introduced him from it used to be law enforcement against prohibition, now it's law enforcement action partnership, I think, LEAP. And he was telling a story about how one time he pulled over a guy on a 16-year-old black kid on like a moped, and he searched it, and the whole thing was about how many times did he just kind of wreck someone's day and forever instill in them an instinctive fear and distrust for the police, which in my opinion, and we've had discussions on this in the past, leads to things like when the police actually should probably be called, which is weird to hear a libertarian say, I know, people are afraid to because they're worried that they'll get busted for some minor thing or whatever. There's a huge drawback that you're not mentioning when you only talk about, well, look who they got. Well, you know what? Look at how many criminals they created by busting up families. Look at how many, you're one of the most pro-life people I know. Look at how many situations they tore apart.
I'm not a fan of the drug war at all.
But we do that, here's the thing. Until we do that, I have seen nothing from most of the, and some police departments, some district attorneys are taking steps. Donald Trump has been the most criminal justice reform president in my lifetime, which is not what I expected, but I'm pretty happy with it. If he could free Ross Ulbricht, that would be great. There's a nice little plug. But what I really want to get on here is until the police are willing to actually help in reforming themselves, they haven't shown to be thus far. There's been tons of cases. I mean,
you just told us about LEAP, right?
Yes, which is an organization made up of ex and retired law enforcement officers who have quit the game because they realize that it's counterintuitive. But until and unless police are willing to come to this realization and they don't have the financial incentives to right now, it doesn't make sense to give them a blank check to go around enforcing the laws, which is exactly what we did. And you don't need to say that just because you're against them doing this, especially like in the short term and blah, blah, blah. But there's a lot that we accept in society that just isn't right. This is bizarre.
What you bring up, the first thing is, I think, is that we have to change the laws.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the first step. From personal experience, I've met and had interactions with cops that were definitely more than willing to look away on the more petty offenses. That's not always the case. But I don't want to do the whole, oh, they're just following orders thing. But my core concern is that there is an ethical issue or gray area where you come to like what laws a cop should or should not enforce and how that call's made. And I'm not quite sure if we say, hey, just go out and enforce whatever you feel like enforcing and not the rest that you don't like. I think if you send that message to law enforcement, you're going to see very uneven enforcement. And
but not only thing, not will you see that, that,
you're
going
to, you're also going to see,
that's American policing. We've
you're,
always,
you're going to go out and
that's the 10th Amendment.
You're going to, what I'm saying is, it kind of erodes the entire value of the legislative process. If my legislators enact a law through our through our Republican, Democratic, Republic process, whatever, and my reps enact laws, and then the cops don't enforce these laws, or that creates all kinds of issues.
The founders said that if a law is blatantly against the Constitution, the war on drugs is blatantly against.
If we all had a consensus on an interpretation of the Constitution, then we wouldn't have the battles we have in the courts today.
So when they're arresting hundreds of thousands of nonviolent gun offenders, we should just have a nice discussion in the courts about whether we should not.
I mean, that's what happens. Exactly what happens when we talk about gun laws. They do get challenged in the courts. But besides the point, I'm not saying like, oh, what is and isn't constitutional. I'm just saying like that just goes back to my whole, you create an ethical gray area where you're asking a cop to become the prosecutor. You're asking him to become a constitutional law scholar, and you're asking him to choose and pick whatever laws he likes. So if a cop really, like some Mormon cop in Utah, thinks weed is really bad, he's going to ruin some kid's life over it. And some other cop in, I don't know, LA or something could care less, or here maybe could care less, or Florida.
My
issue with that is like it creates an unfairness. And on top of that, you haven't fixed the problem. The problem is that, like, weed is illegal, and that's the problem. So it's kind of like
the first order of business is to change what
you define as criminality. That's the issue. It's like, why? You're like, oh, like, I've never gotten a jaywalking ticket. I jaywalk all the time.
But in the mean, oh, well, people have been arrested for it. I mean, crap.
Exactly.
But my point being, I think that we're arguing for the same thing here in a really roundabout way, because I'm a very big fan of discretion and nullification. And like I said, I would love it if police departments would come out and... Yeah, well, I like it on the... I like it in the bureaucratic side, too,
actually.
I think
I've been so public about my love for jury nullification that I have yet to be asked to do jury duty despite having a spotless record.
Yeah, I'll never get asked. But my point being on all this, discretion is as deeply embedded in the American legal fabric as any other tenet of our legal system. That's how it's always been. That's how it was going back even to the common law era before that our founders was in there before the Constitution. So police have always had the discretion to say, I don't know about that particular. And the most horrible abuses have always come from an overly broad, overly simplified laws. And here's the thing, right? Here's the conundrum that we get ourselves into. When we take this, and it doesn't have to be an all or nothing approach, like I said, I'm not like, hey, we should never pull anyone over. I'm just saying, hey, when we pull people over, I as a citizen should be able to make damn sure from the moment that I get pulled over until the moment that I see you, I should know that you're a cop, you're employed by the state, and this is what you're anticipated to do. This is the interaction that we're going to be having. I deserve that. Here's the thing. I'm a taxpayer. I'm supporting them. The fact that they're going after people over largely victimless crimes that the studies have shown don't make us any safer and enabling this kind of stuff is really ludicrous. And what gets lost up in the argument is the fact that, and this is what I'm most critical of, and this is why I'm most... this is why I will question everything until I start to see some widespread consensus on this. And we've seen this in some states. That's really awesome. I'm glad that we have. But what we haven't seen enough of is police officers and departments stepping up and saying, you know what, we're either going to make a commitment towards, although I think some states have done it, not entirely sure, and say, you know what, we're either not going to go after stuff that, I don't know, might be a pretty obvious violation of the Fourth Amendment for starters, but even beyond that, maybe just hey, if we're going to pull you over, we're going to pull you over, and I don't know.
So I want to go back. I want to address the first thing you said. It's like you deserve the right to know that if you're pulled over, that it's an actual cop. And I was like, I agree with that, but I mean, like, let's be honest, like, to what extent can we control crazy people going out and impersonating cops? Even if you say make clearly marked cars, it's like you can make fake decals. They could be magnetic. You could take them off and put them on your car before you leave and take them off in your garage. So it's like, there's none, and you know this better than I do, in a sense, there's no way the government can guarantee this.
They can't guarantee it, but they're making it way too easy. Why are we just used to?
I mean, I disagree. I say I disagree only because, like, very
that's weird, and that's not what a free country
marked police cars, even marked police cars with all the paint and all the whatever, it's really hard to take note of that.
Cool, let's make it harder.
I'm saying it's really hard to note that in the dark when they're pulling you over from behind. Like, there's like, you don't have your headlights on the back of your car, so it's like the extent to whatever fluorescent material you put on there to make it more visible and stuff, it's like it's not really gonna light up at night when a cop pulls you over from behind. Like, all you're going to see are their lights.
But here's the thing.
So how you paint the police car.
You can wait, which you're allowed to do, to pull over until you get to a lighted area that has, I don't know, either a stop sign or something with a traffic light, and then you can't do in their undercover. My point being, like, why are we making it so easy when they're largely doing this over victimless crimes? Because it's not like they're sending this out. It's not like whenever there's like, oh, we think that we got a bank robbery, send the undercover car. That's not what happens. It's largely crimes that might not even best be adjudicated by the criminal justice system. So why are we so gung-ho on it? That's the attitude I'm questioning. That's uncomfortable.
The issue I see here is multi-level, and I actually see the cops being at the bottom of this pyramid. You have the actual legislators who write the laws, and you have judges who are supposed to interpret the laws. And the cops are just tasked with enforcing it, and you're like, oh, well, it's a weak excuse and stuff. But it's like, they're not supposed to be judged. I don't want cops to have court when I get pulled over. They shouldn't be deciding innocence or guilt. They shouldn't be deciding any of those things. And I would cops to have less reasons to pull me over. But to do that, it's like, the best way to handle that issue is to literally reform the laws. There should be less petty infractions. We are an over-criminalized country, which is a damn shame that calls itself the land of the free.
But
so, like, let's address the over-criminalization instead of demonizing cops, especially in this particular example where the cops aren't the bad guys.
But individual departments do decide to spend money on undercover cars and do decide to do all these things.
Yes.
And that, to me, is something that we've grown way too accustomed to. What I would like to bring up for the larger purposes is, why in the hell have we grown so accustomed to this over nonsense reasons? This is very weird, uncomfortable, and leads to bad things.
In the North Dakota legislature that basically banned the use of undercover cop cars with regards to traffic monitoring and traffic. So
Becker after this?
He might do it. So don't get me wrong, every cop will come out and be like, oh, don't do that.
But isn't that very, very interesting?
Well, yeah, because you're right. It's about money.
Policing for profit.
I agree that's immoral. Like, you find welcome ears here. But nonetheless, let's move on. I'm not going to go back and forth. You're not
against them or with them.
I really do have a more neutral take on police officers. I don't have any broad generalizations about most groups.
All right. I think that we've kind of played that out as much as we can. Now that we've gotten past the very mild and welcoming softball issue of policing, let's talk foreign policy.
Blowing things up!
Creating more people that'll blow us up!
Okay, check this out.
Put that one on later, by the way, Duke. So,
all right, let's get into it. Give me your take.
Right. So, I guess... depends where do we want to really start, because we've been off for a while.
I mean, been
a couple of weeks.
Well, we're going to go in Iran. There's other things happening in the world, but we're going to start with Iran.
All right, so let's start it at like the Soleimani killing. Is that a fair starting point?
Some people will say you got to go back to 1953. Some will say 1979. We'll bring that back.
We will bring that back later as a larger discussion. But for the short term, for the people, what's the short term news that's relevant that we can do something about and write our legislators about as if they made laws in the first place?
Well, America and Iran don't get along. It's unfortunate. It's a beautiful country. I'd like to visit, but the current
beautiful
management.
Beautiful rugs.
I mean, the architecture is astonishing. If you ever see some of the cultural sites of Tehran and whatnot, great skiing too. Nonetheless, we're not allowed in. Because of governments.
No alcohol over there anyway. I'm fine.
Governments. Because of governments. Anyways.
Been saying that for 23 years now.
But nonetheless, so Anyways, the U.S. and Iran's been beefing for decades. There were some regime change attempts.
Several. Few were successful.
I mean, okay, so 1979, there was a rebellion, a revolution in Iran. Some religious zealots got control of government, and they've held control of it since. Mm-hmm. And they deposed the Shah of Iran, which
Persian emperor. So that the British could get all that sweet, sweet, sweet Iranian oil in the 1950s. Thanks, CIA.
I mean, there were some other things about the Shah that were good. First and foremost, that he was definitely more leaning towards the whole secular society, in the sense that he didn't believe
people. But he did things like send out death squads and have political police. And
the new guys are hanging gays and oppressing women. Take what you could get in the Middle East. It's a crap place.
What? They didn't take what they could get. They got bombed a bunch, a whole bunch.
I don't think the Shah was a great person at all. I just think he might have been marginally better than the new guys, but
I agree with you. That is kind of my take on the Middle East. Let's stop making it worse. But so nonetheless,
they've hated us ever since.
I'd also like to bring up the whole we funded what may or may not have been a war of genocide in the 1980s when Saddam went in and did horrible things in the Iran-Iraq war, which was funded by American dollars and weapons. But that's just like, I'm sure that, I mean, that's what, 30-40 years ago, only about half their population still remembers the horrors of that war. But going on.
So, anyways, we're not friends with those guys. So there's this guy, General Qasem Soleimani. He was known,
basically. Shall be known as Cold Salami from here on out on the show. Mm-hmm. Go on.
Salami soup. he's super dead, and America has a lot to do with that, specifically Donald Trump. Nonetheless.
Entirely Donald Trump.
No one else was. I personally want to take credit for it. I like to think a fraction of my tax dollars paid for the missile that blew him up.
No, I'm sorry. All your tax dollars went to the one that hit that hospital. My bad.
Dang it.
My bad.
Got to get a little. What is it? I got to get asked for a receipt. Nonetheless, I'm not laughing.
You're on enough watch.
I'm not laughing at dead hospital children. I'm laughing at dead terrorist general. Okay, so let's be very clear about that.
The CIA and DOD are like, what's the difference, bro? A funeral's a funeral, dog.
As far as they're concerned, they all grow
up. It's funny because it's true.
Nonetheless, we
are the baddies. Going on.
So when you get into... Iran's been antagonistic for like the last year.
Iran's government,
not the Iranian people. They just mind their own
business. Going to have a discussion on that later on too, but go on to the Iranian government.
And I think it was, first it started with attacking some tankers, which they denied, but they definitely did. Then they attacked Saudi Arabia's oil fields just to be douchebags, but whatever.
Laughs in North Dakota.
Then they also... Hey, man, they'll attack our oil fields if they could. But nonetheless, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, this was followed by the last straw, I guess, was the recent attacks on the American embassy, which was widely believed to have been the brainchild of Qasem Soleimani. Before those attacks, back during the surge days in the Iraq war, what is that, like 08, 09-ish? He was the guy who introduced really, really dangerous IEDs and explosives, and he literally had them made in Iran and trained basically Shiite militias and extremists on how to build them.
Trained Hezbollah too, right?
Yeah, trained Hezbollah, all those guys. And he trained them how to build them. He got them the materials.
If only there was a stable force in the Middle East that were capable of helping to control and divide Iran. Damn, if only there were a geographic regional person that could be a buffer against them. What a shame. This was surely impossible. Go on.
So, nonetheless, that ended up killing over 600 Americans, wounding well over 1,000 more, and killing thousands of Iraqis.
Which is still not as many people as our generals and Department of Defense officials killed by lying us into Afghanistan, I'd like to just say for a half a second, but go on. Larger discussion. But yes, horrible person, terrorist.
My thing is, so, you know, Trump pressed the delete button on, oh boy, and apparently it was a very controversial
thing. Trump unilaterally, without consulting anyone in Congress or anyone else.
I mean,
else
he was acting within his power, so I don't really think
that's
much of
a very debatable. There is a lot. I don't know. I've read the authorization of use of military force for Iraq, and it doesn't say anything about targeting Iranian generals.
It does say that things about targeting terrorists, which he's authorized to do under the powers granted to the presidency under the authorization and reauthorization of the global war on terror. You can hate the global war on terror. I didn't write it.
Which is itself, by the way,
I have my problems with
unconstitutional.
I really have my problems with it.
We're missing the forest for the trees here.
But if you're
going to
argue
$1 trillion war, that's not costing us
anything. Let's back up. We're talking purely legal. I don't want to get into the politics of it. I'm not a big fan of even being in the Middle East, but my point being is, Congress did authorize that and give that power to the president. And even before that, Congress, the U.S. State Department, before Trump even became president, designated this person, this individual, Qassem Soleimani. Yeah. Salami suit dude. They designated him a terrorist. So it's like because of that, and that was an official designation even before Trump and an official designation by the United States, it's like he was acting within the powers given to him and delegated to him by Congress.
But we could argue
Congress shouldn't have done that.
Shouldn't even be allowed to do that.
And I would even agree with you that those powers should be revoked for all presidents moving forward, not just Trump. But nonetheless,
so it was an illegal strike, but illegal you support under the illegal. Okay, I get it. So the people that lied about getting these bills passed, about WMDs, and a decade before that about Kuwaiti babies being thrown out of incubators. While they were wrong about that, we were right to do it this time. Gotcha. So here's the thing. You're saying that you're saying that it's probably the whole thing's bad, but this time, a-okay. Right?
No, I was specifically responding to your comment about without consulting Congress. I was like, you don't have to. Congress gave them those powers, and if Congress don't like them having those powers, they should take it back. I would even recommend it. I'd be in favor of it. So it's like the thing is.
Let me say again.
The weird thing is was it wrong for a U.S. president to order the killing of a known enemy combatant? No, it wasn't.
But here's the other thing.
It wasn't wrong. It wasn't morally wrong. It wasn't ethically wrong.
But was it a good play to do so while also in a manner that angered Iraq, in a manner that the Iranians stood down, so that's something we'll get into in a second. But I want to talk about the risk that puts us on in a geopolitical sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because as the Iraqi prime minister later said, yeah, we actually invited the dude over. So is... Because they're going to appoint a successor, they're going to do all those things. The Iranian, and I would like to take this moment to say that we've actually seen a lot of evidence that the Iranian people actually aren't as anti-US as they used to be. There was that widely shared video online of Iranian protesters or Iranian students purposely not walking over American and Israeli flags that were set outside of I think it was the Polytechnic Institute in Tehran or something like that.
The young are always rebels.
Yes, they walked around it. So to be clear, what this speaks of to me is Iran is very desperate and looking for outs or looking for people.
Oh, yeah.
To
I do believe part.
I just think that we did it in like even the discussion about blah 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 authorizing Congress. Did we really have to do it when he was in Iraq with Iraq's consent on a diplomatic mission? Like, it's a bad flex. You know what I mean? That
I believe the sovereignty concerns that that come into play here with Iraq, the fact that we bombed somebody in Iraq and then Iran responded by trying to bomb us in Iraq.
Well,
I think that's grossly unfair for Iraq. I do believe that to me is a very legitimate concern. We keep talking about how sovereignty and democracy matters. Then we install a sovereign democratic government in Iraq. Then we proceed to ignore that government and literally ignore its sovereignty, which I think
because we are the baddies.
Yeah, that's not right. That's improper. And I do believe because we've been asked by the prime minister and the Iraqi Congress or parliament to leave, we should definitely start packing up. Mm-hmm. I have no issue with that. And I'll agree 100% with you on that. My thing about it is in terms of Iran, ain't nobody scared of them.
I agree with you.
They try to poke the bear. You got to put them in place. They did this in the 80s. They did it to Ronald Reagan. They did it when they were during the Iraq war. They literally mined the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz, and so it's kind of like my thing is like this is what they do, and in terms of like, oh well, another war and all this kind of stuff, those are legit concerns. I'm not trying to dissipate them, but it's like the last thing, and we saw this leading up to the strikes. It's like the last thing you can do is like try to ignore them, because they will ratchet it up further and further. They shot down American drones, attacking tankers, literally seizing ships and allied ships, bombing oil fields. It's like they literally will ratchet up until you respond. So the question isn't if you can ignore Iran, is like basically what do you have to do to get Iran to stop or at least back off for a while? And I think Trump answered that question properly.
So here's the thing. I'm not gonna do that thing that a lot of, especially, it hasn't been so much libertarians. Iran's a bad actor. I mean, I think personally that we are probably, from a neutral perspective, like, for stability, just as bad, if not worse, than Iran. We pick some nasty sides. That is true. We're, you know, we have all the gall to condemn
Iran.
Yeah,
we only hang out with the Saudis because they hate Iran.
Exactly. And for the oil. Which brings up a larger point that I want to talk about, and this is kind of an open question. For those of you on Facebook, I'd love to hear your input on this.
Well, they're gonna sell us the oil regardless. They need the money.
But here's the thing, right? Why the hell are we going through so much? It seems ridiculous that, because I get why we were so buddy buddy with the Saudis in the '70s and the '80s when we were like, oh yeah, by the way, OPEC, we don't want to do a '70s oil embargo again. But we're kind of past that, you know what I mean?
I agree.
My boys out west in rural North Dakota, my boys in Texas, we got our friends with the Canadian oil sands, we got some pipelines going up. They will continue to go up, by the way, crazy libertarian approved. They are safer. But
that's actually a banner on the physical pipeline that says crazy libertarian right on it.
Oh, how I wish I had that. If there's anyone that knows anyone in pipeline industry, I will make the banner and hang it up to give me a spot to do it. That'd be pretty cool. But so I guess what I want to talk about is there's two very distinct things here, maybe even three. First off, we can agree that Iran for decades has been in a somewhat desperate position, right? I mean, any time that you're in a position where it's kind of a catch-22.
I wouldn't say for decades, but for the last recent 10-15 years, yes.
But like any time that you come in by the barrel of a gun, you're either leaving power due to natural causes like Chavez or Castro, or you're getting hung. Or maybe you get to run out to a foreign country that was friendly to you and live your days out in a mansion. One of those three things. So we have a very desperate country on Iran's part that's trying to poke the bear, unite its enemy against a common force, right? Unite its enemy against a common front. But why are we even... The thing that I think not enough people are talking about, especially, and some people are, but not nearly enough, Republicans, is why the hell are we still here? And why the hell, especially after we have the Afghanistan papers proving that the war is a lie, we know that Saudi Arabia is doing horrible things, any of the things you want to criticize.
I'm going to answer that question. And I'm not going to answer it in a
boondoggle. We've wasted
way.
Trillions. We've killed thousands of Americans, millions of civilians.
Would you like me to answer your question?
I would. I was just
okay, cool. Yeah, we know the wars are dumb. No,
you're, and illegal.
Anybody who actually watches or listens to your show definitely know your views on war. Nonetheless, so why are we still over there? The question is, I think the best and the most interesting case study was Trump's, I guess what you could call it now, is a pump fake on Syria, where he's like, oh well, we're leaving Syria, which has actually been one of our shorter military engagements in terms of what we've been doing in the Middle East. And the whole world cried foul. It was bipartisan. The whole news media dug in on him. And
he was leaving a small section in a really, really embarrassing way for America's geopolitical stance.
That's garbage. First
he
of
was
foremost,
redeploying them to the
no,
oil
no, no,
fields.
No, 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 no. Time out. I'm going to cry foul.
Doesn't feel real.
No, what happened was he announced the pullout. He got pressured into staying, because at first he was like, oh, well, we're going to just send him to Saudi Arabia. And everybody's like, well, they're not really coming back home, so it doesn't count. And I was like, oh, it's not a war zone, so marginal improvement. Nonetheless, hot spot, but not exactly a war zone. So my thing is, he decided to pull the troops out and send them to the oil fields after meeting with Lindsey Graham, famous neocon, saying we don't want the Russians or whoever to get control of that oil. And and the Kurds needed us to help them protect it, whatever. So, like, I get those concerns, and I really do get that from a strategy standpoint, but you're going to have this argument everywhere. When we left Vietnam, like, several of the Southern Vietnamese, which was a country for a while, several of those people died. They were executed for collaborating with the United States. There were literally people. There was a dramatic video of a man who literally wanted to save his family. He couldn't land it on the ship. So he got them out, and the guy literally jumps out of the helicopter into the ocean while it falls in the ocean trying to get out of Vietnam. And we had airlifts to get people out of there and stuff. It's like, there's no way.
Which happened actually a couple years after we pulled out. It wasn't like a direct causation thing, but go on.
What are we talking about, in Vietnam?
Yeah, in Vietnam. We signed a peace agreement. We were like, cool, and then the South Vietnamese fell later. But when we pulled out of Vietnam,
like when we packed up to leave, we had literally ships filled with Vietnamese refugees that we brought back with our Navy, because they were basically, they fought against the communists and they worked for the other government, and they were going to be killed. And a lot of them actually were killed or imprisoned for years for being collaborators with the United States. So there's no way we could leave Iraq in a non-embarrassing way. Like, if we pull out and we leave the Kurds out there,
who gives a crap? Who gives a crap?
That's my point. So when you brought that up in Syria and you're like, oh, well, he was going to leave it, it's like, there's no beautiful way to do that. Like,
then man up and do it. You said you were going to do in your run for president and pull the troops out.
Agree.
That's a cowardly play, and the Republicans are being cowardly on this.
But my point being, once the media spin got out there and the bipartisan whining, the insufferable whining from both Republicans and Democrats about why we should stay in Syria, public opinion did change.
Sounds like the swamp might have drained Trump on this one, folks. I guess that if you were looking for an outsider radical, you should have voted for Gary Johnson.
It's about more than politics. Just like the
no matter what you did, you were going to get a New York Democrat in 2016. So I guess there's that. And he's governing like it. So polling shifted.
No, I mean, that matters, though.
I mean, not if you're an outsider who's going to bust down the power structure and do
if you're
all the
a populist, public opinion matters
do.
A lot to you, and that's what he is. But nonetheless, and especially if you're
doesn't
going,
sound
if
like
you
the
want
populist
to be re-elected.
Stuff that he was saying in the stadiums, but I guess that I granted, I guess that I have.
I'm not making excuses for Trump and stuff. I'm just saying what happened there, because you were like, oh, blah, blah. I was like, is like what happened there was like basically there was a huge outcrying to stay in Syria for no good reason. And that's more than just the neocons. There was definitely NBC played a role in that. CNN played a role in that. Fox News played a role in that. Like every major media, no matter if you say left wing or right wing, all of them were literally screaming like, oh, you can't leave Syria. ISIS is going to come back. The Kurds. What about the Kurds? And that it's like, you can make that argument in Iraq. You can make that argument all over the Middle East. You can make that. You can make that argument almost everywhere except for Western Germany, which I still don't understand why we have troops there. People are like, we need to get out of Iraq. I'm like, I can't even get my 30,000 troops out of Germany. And they don't even like us. And they could take care of themselves. It's like, how about we get them out of Western Europe first? How about that for starters?
You know, I think that this brings up a really kind of sort of loosely ties in, and I don't want to go revisit what we spent the first 20 minutes of the show talking about, but it ties in with the larger picture. You mentioned earlier that the thing that we need to do in a lot of these circumstances is change the laws and all that other stuff. But I think that we're getting to a point where it almost doesn't even matter who we vote for, because your congressman's not going to have a say in the war. The president is going to get pulled around by whatever public forces that be to keep them there. I guess the question that I have, and the thing that's really kind of the cynical little bit that I'll leave in everyone's mouth today is, you know, if we have a guy that's running on getting the troops home and draining the swamp and being different, and if we have all this stuff going on, and then he ends up governing exactly like everybody else while the laws continue to not change in any significant way, I guess the question from a legitimacy standpoint, that's a very valid question that, I mean, people listening to my show probably already asked. Hopefully we get out to a few new people, yay. But, like, it just kind of comes down to what's the point. And I think that that's a very dangerous spot to be with our political dialogue, but I think that we're getting there.
I don't think it's dangerous. I think it's a phenomenal question, and I agree. I just, my big thing is, I think we should be getting out of the Middle East. I was just asking your question while we're still there. We have a military-industrial complex that's extremely powerful in this country. It is probably the top lobbying organization in the United States. And because of that, so many people are bought, so many people have interest, all the way from media talking heads to the politicians themselves, that they actually have the power to shift public opinion on this. Because I was surprised by the outpour. People were like, oh, what about the Kurds? I'm like, well, what about them? I'll be honest with you, at least first and foremost, for those who don't know, Kurdistan is a region that spans several countries. There's Turkish Kurdistan, there's a Syrian Kurdistan, Iraqi Kurdistan, and even, and if I'm not mistaken, an Iranian Kurdistan as well.
There's a little bit of like Azerbaijanistan. I don't know, yeah, one of those Armenia, one of those weird stans or anias.
I think it's safe to say if you find yourself hanging out with the stans in a geopolitical sense, you're already in shady stuff.
Yep, so that is true.
No good reason to be in that part of the world if you weren't born there. That's true. Nonetheless, these are the Syrian Kurds. Not all Kurds are like this, but the Syrian Kurds particularly are like super communist anyways. And those aren't the Iraqi Kurds that fought with us during the Iraq War. So people were like, oh, we can't abandon the Kurds. And I was like, yeah, we can. Pack it up, go home. And people are like,
don't even have salt alliances over there.
If you could say oil, you could use all kinds of stupid reasons to be in the Middle East and to verify. My biggest thing when I told you what upset me the most about the Soleimani strike or the reactions to it was the same people who were extraordinarily critical of withdrawing from Syria were the same people that were extremely critical of attacking Soleimani. And I found that
called salami.
I found that peculiar because I was like, this guy is a very known threat to American forces in the region. And I'm like, how can you be in favor of us staying in that region yet not in favor of us actually killing the people who threaten American troops there? That's a weird thing for me.
Because consistency doesn't exist, and elections don't matter.
And I believe most of it would have had more to do with being anti-Trump than being anti-war in that particular case, because the anti-war left is still dead. It showed signs of life when after the Trump Soleimani strikes, they all went out and protested. But let's be honest, if it was Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, there wouldn't have been a single protest in the streets for that drone strike. They would have gotten pats on the back. The American networks would have been a gazillion times more generous with the coverage.
They would have been talking about that. I agree with you. It would have been horrible, but
I'm happy that we're having these conversations. And as far as the left is willing to pretend to be anti-war for the moment, I think we should take advantage of it to do something.
To be fair, though, I think that 5% of the left is anti-war. It's just that, unfortunately, that's the 5% that split between Andrew Yang and Tulsi Gabbard. So,
polling says that analysis is correct.
I mean, it might bump up to 7%, but it ain't looking good, folks. But anyhow, I think that we've taken up enough time and kind of beat this horse to death on its way to the glue factory. So this has been the crazy libertarian Bradley Foster with my special guest
Granatola Raheem Williams.
Granatola.
Just made myself a Shiite religious cleric. Yep.
I would once again like to emphasize, this is not the man that said that, for those of you watching in Iran. Thank you so much, the crazy libertarian, over and out. Hey there, folks. This has been the Crazy Libertarian on 88.1 FM, coming to you every Wednesday morning, 8 a.m. I really hope you enjoyed. Please be back next week. We will actually get back to a kind of regular schedule, unlike my sleep schedule, so we'll be back at it strongly. And, you know, we're talking about a lot today, a lot of different stuff, and it's all kind of the bigger picture is like, how much of what our government, especially at the federal level, is constantly doing is actually legal? And how much of this is actually for the people, by the people, with the people? You know what I mean? Because a lot of it doesn't feel that way. And so I'll give a little shout out to a guy, Chris Christopherson, one of the Four Highwaymen, one of the greatest country artists and songwriters to ever live. And this is his song, The Laws for Protection of the People. I'll let the song do the talking, but I just really want to kind of emphasize how much of us believe that a lot of these laws aren't just to make money for a certain group of people. And when in the hell are we going to start acting like they're not for that exact purpose? Because until we do, I don't think it's going to get any better, and a lot of what we talk about is only going to get worse. Folks, I don't want my kids to have to be talking about this on their own radio show. Let's end it now. So without further ado, we have The Laws for Protection of the People by Chris Christopherson. Crazy Libertarian, over and out.
Eddie Dalton staggered on the sidewalk. Someone said he stumbled and he fell. Six squad cars came screaming to the rescue. Hauled old Billy Dalton off to jail. Cause the law is for protection of the people. Rules are rules and any fool can see. We don't need no drunks like Billy Dalton scaring decent folks like you and me. No siree. Homely Honeycutt was nothing but a hippie. Walking through this world without a care. Then one day six strapping brave policemen held down Homer Lee and cut his hair. Cause the law is for protection of the people. Rules are rules and any fool can see. We don't need no hairy-headed hippies scaring decent folks like you and me. No siree. Oh, so thank your lucky stars you've got protection. Walk the line and never mind the cost. No wonder who them lawmen was protecting when they nailed the Savior to the cross. Cause the law is for protection of the people. Rules are rules and any fool can see. We don't need no riddle-speaking prophets scaring decent folks like you and me. No siree.